Grupo.
Hey, is that audible? All right, let's see. So, as I was saying, we are thinking today to look more at functions that are Riemann integrable and try to get a little bit better handle on exactly what those are. In fact, I'll even state a theorem, although not in complete detail, that gives the one complete answer. Mostly what we'll do is just add a few more. Actually a fairly large collection of functions that are Riemann integrable. And then I want to move on to more Riemann integrable functions. And then I want to move on to the main reason that we introduced integrals in the beginning, which was that they're supposed to be an inverse to derivatives. And in other words, the fundamental theorem of calculus. So we'll start in on that. So today, Riemann integrable functions. And the fundamental theorem of calculus. Okay. All right, so let me just recall briefly where we are as far as Riemann integrable functions, and then also some functions that we don't know yet whether they're Riemann integrable that we'll be able to handle. Okay, so we already know, let's see, I guess it was 11.28 that showed us that continuous functions are Riemann integrable. Okay, so that gives us a pretty big class. Often those are the ones we care about, but there are more, and 11.30 was a good hint. If we have any increasing function at all, no matter how many discontinuities it has, it's still Riemann integrable. Okay, so that suggests that the continuous ones are really just kind of a small set of the possible integrable functions. Now, to make sure that it's not all functions, we at least found one function that wasn't. So the characteristic function on Q, which just means that it's one if X is a rational number and zero otherwise. And this we showed was not Riemann integrable. So it's not all functions. Okay, so that much we established. Okay, and then the other thing that we did was in the homework, we identified an interesting function, the Tome function, which is about as close as you could imagine to the characteristic function of Q, but is nonetheless integrable. Okay, and so that's an interesting one to look at. So this is the Tome function. Call it T for Tome of X. And that was equal to 1 over N if X was equal to A over N and 0 otherwise. Okay, so it was a little bit like the characteristic function on Q in that it was a non-zero only for rational numbers. But this one you showed in the homework is in fact Riemann integrable. Okay, so this is kind of the dividing line, right? This one is kind of barely Riemann integrable, and this one is barely not Riemann integrable. So this is actually, I have a little picture of it. Let me just bring it up. If I make that work. Right. So that's the Tome function. It's from its from the Wikipedia page. Anyway, as you can see, it's it doesn't. It's not very continuous, right? It's discontinuous at every rational point, but it's nonetheless has an area which is zero. All right, so actually, the one thing I do want to mention is the biggest difference between these two functions from the perspective of identifying whether they're Riemann integrable is exactly the set of points at which it's discontinuous. Okay, so actually, can anyone tell me what those are? And I claim they're fairly different in these two cases. So, so let's look at these. So let me write the DISC for discontinuous points. So if the discontinuous points of F is just the set of all X such that F is not continuous at X, can you tell me what the discontinuities are for these two functions that we're looking at? So, so the set of points at which the characteristic function at Q, so it's just one or zero, as opposed to the discontinuity points of the Tome function that I put, just the Tome function. What these are. Okay, so I think it's clear that if I look at the Tome function, which I just had graphed on the screen a second ago, which looks like this, when I look at any rational point, is the function continuous at that rational point? So if I take a limit toward some rational point, a over n, right, I can get arbitrarily close, and I'll still have a not irrational point, so I'll get a bunch of zeros, and those are clearly not approaching this. Okay, so I claim that it's not continuous at any rational point. And in fact, those are exactly the points where it's discontinuous. Okay, whereas this other point is discontinuous in the entire interval. Yes. So let me just look at the interval 0, 1. So this is a discontinuous everywhere in 0, 1. Okay. So so these are fairly different in the set of points at which they're discontinuous, and that's the way that we're going to distinguish them. All right. So let me just add then a couple of more theorems. So last time we got 11.44 that says that things are continuous are integrable, even if and only if they're integrable on a two parts. And now what I want to say is that if they're integrable on a region all the way up to a point, then they're integral on the whole region. So that's 11.50. And before I do that, let me list some functions that we haven't identified yet. Actually, can anyone think of a function that we don't know yet? So it's not continuous and it's not increasing. So we're not sure whether it's Riemann integrable. Okay, so one would be something like the sine of 1/x. Or zero, if x is equal to zero. Right, so that's a function that is not continuous. It's almost continuous. It's continuous except at zero, right, where it becomes a discontinuous there at zero. So this discontinuity set for f is just the point zero, right? Everywhere else it's continuous. Okay. So the question is this one the Riemann integrable functions? All right, and another one, let me try one that's a little bit more confusing. Let me take a g of x, and I'm going to make it even more singular by just taking the sine of 1 over this. So the sine of 1 over the sine of 1 over x. Okay, and this makes sense as long as the sine of 1 over x is non-zero. So this is sine of 1 over x is not 0, x is not 0, and 0 otherwise. Okay. So can anyone see what the discontinuity set for this one is? So when I get close to any point where the sine of 1 over x is 0, right, then I'm going to have a point of discontinuity. So it's going to approach there, and then it's going to do it again, and then again, and then again, and it's going to get denser and denser. Okay. So the discontinuity points are exactly the places where f is 0. Okay, and those are just, the sine is zero at multiples of pi, so it's susceptible n over, 1 over n pi, okay, along with the element zero itself. Okay, so that's its discontinuity set. Okay, so this one has an infinite discontinuity set. Right? So those are two more examples, and the question then once again is this in R int. Okay, so any questions about where we are? All right, so then let me prove another theorem that will identify things like these two examples that we just did. So, and that's the theorem that I wrote down a minute ago, 11.50. Okay, and it says the following, if I have a bounded function, all right, and actually, let me just do 0, 1, because it's just slightly easier notation. Let's see if it works for any interval. But 0, 1, I'll do right now. Okay, whenever I restrict to an interval which is a little bit away from 0, then I get an integrable function. So for all epsilon greater than 0, we have f restricted to epsilon to 1 being Riemann integrable, then I have that f is itself Riemann integrable. Okay. So for example, which of the two functions that we just talked about now will follow immediately from this theorem as being Riemann integrable? Yeah, exactly. The sine of 1 over x is going to be therefore Riemann integrable because that one is continuous whenever I look at the interval from epsilon to 1, I get a continuous function. We know those are integrable, okay? So it's, and since that's true for every epsilon, this theorem is going to tell us that, in fact, even though it's discontinuous there at 0, it's still Riemann integrable, okay? That will follow from it. So hence, f of x above, sine of 1 over x, Is Riemann integrable? Okay, so let's prove this. So proof. Okay, so this the function we assumed was bounded. So let me just give a name to the max that it achieves. So write M for the maximum. So the supernorm of my function f. Okay, we can do that because f is bounded. All right. And now we want for all epsilon greater than zero, there exists some P, a partition of the interval. Well, I can take it as close as I like to zero, right? Because that's what I'm assuming is that for any epsilon, and I'm going to take it epsilon over m, okay, just for convenience, all right? So I'm going to take it from epsilon over m out to one, okay? And since we know that our function is integrable on that interval there, I can find a partition that gives it a good approximation. So let me do that. So with the difference between the upper and lower approximations, are going to be small. So u of my function f restricted to epsilon over m1 with the partition p minus L of this same restriction is small. Okay, and by small, let me see, let me take it to be less than epsilon. Okay, so I can always do that, right? Because I get upper and lower approximations since it's Riemann integrable, all right? Okay, hence, okay, so let's see, I have this, let me draw a picture over here. I have my function, it goes from zero to one, and I'm looking at an interval here that starts at epsilon over m and goes over to one. All right, and I have a partition p inside of there. All I need to do is add zero to it, right? And then I'll get a partition of the entire interval from zero to one. So let me do that. Hence, P union zero, let me call that P hat, is a partition from zero to one, right? It just has one more interval than P did, right? I had just this one new interval here at the beginning, okay? And I can now compute u of f minus L of f, which I would like to be going to zero, right? If that's going to zero, then I have that it's Riemann integrable. And so it's going to be bounded, and it's going to be bounded by what I get for a particular partition. I'll just take this one that I just have here. So u of f using the partition p hat minus L of f using the partition p hat. Okay. And I just want that to be small. All right, and what can I say? Well, when I look at my interval over here, if I look at all the intervals except the first one, of course, that's exactly what I had before, right? So that's less than epsilon. And how much can this first interval contribute? Can anyone see that? So I just have one extra interval. Let me write it out. So it's less than or equal to the first interval. So that's going to be the length of the first interval, which is epsilon over m minus zero. That's the length of the first interval times the height of the first interval. So that's going to be the sup over x in this interval of f of x minus the inf. Right, that'll be the u minus the l. Plus the part that I get from the other remaining intervals. Okay, is that clear to everyone? So this one is from the first interval. And this is from all the others. Okay, and but the soup and the inf are bounded by this M. So the most I get is M. And so this is an, what we wanted. So then this is less than or equal to, I guess that could be a 2M. So I could have a 2. So epsilon over M, the 0 is obviously 0, times a 2M plus epsilon. So we're done, and hence F is Riemann integrable, which approaches zero. So hence F is Riemann integrable. Okay, any questions about that one? Okay, let me write down one corollary of this 11.50, and then I'm going to give you a chance in the breakout room to try to figure out this function, this more complicated looking function here, and try to prove that that one is also Riemann integrable by using both this theorem here that I just proved, 11.50, that whenever I have every interval up to epsilon, from epsilon on being integrable, then the whole thing is, and the corollary. So let me just note the corollary, and then you can use both of those to get this other example. So corollary, and this is 11.53. Okay, and it just says, what if I have only finitely many discontinuities? Well, then I can use this trick to add each one in, and then I'll be done. So if we have a bounded function, and the set of discontinuities is finite, then F is Riemann integrable. Okay, I think I will just leave the proof of that, unless there are questions about it. I hope that it's fairly clear, or at least you can think through how you would prove that given 11.50. Right, so I have this finite collection of discontinuities. I can just prove one at a time, just like it. Get proof. Maybe I'll just say what it uses. So it uses 11.50 and 11.44. Yeah, so you can stick things together. Okay. If there are no questions about that, then I'd like to give you 3 minutes in the breakout room just to try to figure out how to show that this function g is, in fact, Riemann integrable. So breakout room, show that g of x above is a Riemann integrable on 0, 1. So using 11.50 and 11.53. Okay, if you put those together, then you can. Any questions about what I wanted you to look at here for a second? Okay, let's see. So did people get that to work? All right, well, let's see. Let's just try it. So let's try to apply this theorem 11.50. Okay, so use 11.50. So what does that say? It says that if my function is Riemann integrable whenever I restrict to an interval from epsilon to 1, then it's Riemann integrable. So consider this g restricted to the interval from epsilon to 1. Okay, so what does the set of singularities of discontinuous points, rather, for g restricted to epsilon 1 look like? Let's see what the points where it's discontinuous are. Is everyone following what this g is? So this is this function up here. I took my sine and I plugged in the 1 over the sine of 1 over x. So it's going to be singular wherever this function up here, f, is 0, right? So I'll get something that looks just like a copy of that function at each of these zeros. So the discontinuity set is as written here. It's 0 along with all the 1 over n pi's, the places where sine of 1 over x is 0. Okay, so if I restrict it to epsilon to 1, then this will be the set of all 1 over n pi, such that 1 over n pi is bigger than epsilon. Right? And in other words, the set of all 1 over n pi, such that I guess just solving for n, I have that n is less than or equal to 1 over pi epsilon. Okay, and so what's the most salient feature about that set? How big is it? Finite, exactly. That's the key point. So, which is a finite set. Okay, and so now we're in the position to apply this corollary that if we have a finite set, then it's Riemann integrable. Hence, by corollary 11.53, this g restricted to epsilon 1 is integrable. Okay, so we've got that for every epsilon here, we're going to get the thing is integrable, and that's now puts us right back into 11.50 that says that that makes the entire thing integrable. Therefore, by theorem 11.50, g is itself integrable. Okay, so so we can get we can build a bunch of functions this way that have more and more complicated sets at which they are discontinuous, and we also have the Tome function, which has a complicated set where it's discontinuous. So there are lots of variations that we can get, that's about as far as we're going to go, is we can build a bunch of these. But let me just write the answer, okay, and just leave it at that. And, but we're not going to prove it or even completely define it. Okay, so I'll just write the answer here, which is a theorem, which is not proved in the text either, but you can look it up. Let's see, it's 11.61. And it says that this is nonetheless a way to characterize all the Riemann integrable functions. There is a set, it's a collection, let me call it Z for zero, because that's Z of subsets of AB, so that F is so that a bounded function F is in the Riemann integrable functions on AB, if and only if its discontinuities are the points where it's not continuous are exactly Z, in Z. Only if the points of discontinuity, the ISC of F, are one of these sets in Z. Okay, so that's a fact. Okay, and the call elements of Z set to measure zero which is where the Z comes from. Okay, and the text has another definition of this, but we're really not going to do much with it. So let me just note that it exists, and you can play around with it if you like. The only thing I suppose worth mentioning is that, I'll just say it, there are every countable set is measure zero, and there are sets of measure zero which are not countable. So that's not a characterization. So it's actually a bit complicated to identify which sets are measure zero, but the interesting fact is that if you just look at where your function is discontinuous, that's enough to tell you whether it's Riemann integrable. Okay, so that's what I wanted to do with which functions are actually Riemann integrable. Then I want to move on to the fundamental theorem of calculus. Any questions about which functions are Riemann integrable? Okay, so next is chapter 12, which is fundamental theorem of calculus. It starts that way. And again, this is how we motivated the whole point of integrals was this. So that's what we want next. So the point of integrals which is the fundamental theorem of calculus. And let me just remind you of an example so that you know what we're trying to do. So now you may feel that we already did this in Math 21, but as usual, we're trying to do it now for a bigger class of functions. Okay, so in Math 21, you can prove it for some functions, but we want to see just how far you can make it go. And it's a little bit tricky to figure out exactly how far you can make it go, but that's going to be our plan here. But let me start with a simple one. So if we take f of x equals just x squared, so just something easy. And just give you a little bit of notation. Actually, let me add some notation first, and then I'll use it. So notation. If I have a Riemann integrable function, on AB, then I'll write down J of F, okay, and this is going to be a new function, and it's going to be the integral. So JF of X will be the integral from 0 up to x of f of y dy. All right, and note, so by 11.44, we know that when I restrict my function from 0 to x, it's still integrable, so this function is well-defined. JF is well-defined. Since by 11.44, if I take my f and restrict it to 0 to x, this is Riemann integrable. Okay, so I can compute the integral. All right, very good. Let's see, other facts. Let's see, what about the jf of 0? Is it clear what that is? I'm sorry. I have zeros here where I should have a's, right? Let me fix that. So so that should have been from a up to x, right? So I should start at my left-hand endpoint. And similarly, this should be a. Okay, so what I'm curious then about is the value jf at a. Clear what that one has to be. Exactly right. So that's just 0 because that's the integral from a from a to a. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the last note is that these are bounded functions again. So JF is bounded. On AB, since JF of x. Well, let's see what's the biggest it can be. So it's going to be less than or equal to the length of that. So x minus a times the maximum value that f can take on. So that's right. Of f. So that's going to be the supernormal of f. Which is finite because f is bounded. Okay, so those are just some immediate facts about this J, which is supposed to be the inverse function. Okay, so then let me continue with the example that I had before of x squared that I was starting there. Let me just rewrite it. So example f of x equals x squared. Okay, so then J of that should be familiar. So is it clear what that is? Just unraveling all my notation. All right, so JF is just taking the integral. Okay, so it's the standard integral that you know from previous calculus courses. So it'll be a third x cubed. Okay. And so then if we take the derivative, so the derivative of j of f is, so by d, I mean the prime is another name for it. And so that's just to back to where we started. Okay, so that's the type of inverse we want, but we also want the inverse the other way. And so there are sort of two versions of the fundamental theorem. One is this inverse and the other is the other inverse, and we want both of them. So the other one is going to be if I first take the derivative and then take the integral. So if I take d of f at x, that's just the derivative, so that's going to be 2x. And finally, if I then integrate that, so j d f of x, again, once I get back to where I started. And so these are going to be the two facts that we're going to want to prove here, is that if I take a dj of a function, then I get back to f. And if I take jd of a function, then I get back to f. And what we're really interested in is, for which functions does this work? Okay, so that's going to be our goal. We know it for this one, but we'd like to know it for a larger class of functions. So the question, for which functions do we get these two facts? So if I take d and then if I first integrate and then take the derivative of f, that I get f back. And the second thing would be if I first take the derivative and then integrate f, I get f back. So those are the two. And actually, So those are the two things you have to do. All right, let me start on that. Okay, so the first one is theorem, 12.6. In the text, and it says that if we have a Riemann integrable function, then we get a continuous function. And so that's gonna move us toward taking the integral and then differentiating. So we're gonna be looking at this first one here. And so the first statement is that if I have a Riemann integrable function, on AB, JF is continuous. All right, so proof. All right, so to show that something is continuous, I need to take the limit and see if I get the value. So we need to check the limit as x approaches C from the right, say, of JF of X is equal to JF of C, and similarly from the left. Okay, those are two things we need. All right, so let's begin. Compute. The limit as x approaches c from the right of jf of x is equal to, so I see the limit and just write out what j is. So j is the integral, right? That's the definition, from a up to x of f of x, f of y rather, dy. So we get, let's just take the difference here. So we have this limit as x goes to c from the right of j of f of x minus jf at c is equal to the limit as x goes to c from the right of the integral. Okay, so it's going to be the integral from a to x of f minus the integral from a to c of f. And that's just going to be the integral from c to x. So I'll add all the in all the y's back in. But anyway, I hope it's still what that is. So that's up from c up to x of f of y dy. Okay, but I claim this is bounded, right? So what's the biggest that that can be? So this is less than or equal to, well, I can just use the single box. So and so that's going to be the length there, which will be x minus c times the maximum possible height. And that's just going to be the sup of f. Okay, and so as x approaches c, this term is bounded, and the other one is going to zero. So this one is some fixed number, and that one's going to zero. So we are done. Oops, I dropped my limit. Sorry. So then the whole thing is zero. All right, any questions about that? All right, so let's see. So one thing that that okay, I guess I'm out of time. All right, so so next time we will finish up. So far what we've got is that if we start with a Riemann integrable function, we get something that's continuous and zero. And next time I want to figure out for exactly which functions we're going to get that once I take this derivative and get that continuous function, that when I differentiate it again, I'm sorry, once I take an integral continuous function, when I differentiate it again, I get back to my original function. So you might think about for which functions it works. And we will in more detail work that out next time. Okay, so we'll stop the recording and stick around.